Greetings, fellow conspirators. Gardner Goldsmith here with you, opening with great music from one of the greatest bands ever to walk the streets of Boston, Massachusetts, the Zulus. Is going to be dedicated to an analysis of the Boston Marathon bombings, which occurred on April 15th. This is going out the day after that occurred, as I was joined by Ferb, and actually before we even got to record this, by Ian of Free Talk Live. Ferb, the founder of the Freedom Book Club, and I hope you'll follow him at freedombookclub.com and of course on Twitter under the title Freedom Book Club. Every song in this production is a song by a band from Boston. Really just a sentimental thing. It's something that is a tip of my hat to the folks who helped make that city beat like a beating heart. So, I wasn't there. I can't begin to fathom what those people experienced. And so, claiming some sort of identity with Boston is really quite beyond what I am going to try to do here. I'll just say that I have an affinity for the city. I appreciate it. And I think that the people who have moved through those streets and through those places have really created some amazing, distinct things. And they have helped each other and been good to each other down there. So hopefully this program will be something that is done with respect and done with our eyes towards allowing our neighbors to be free. So I hope you'll join us in listening to this, and sometimes at the end of segments as commercials were approaching, thoughts had to be put on hold. So just listen to those things and remember that as the breaks come up, there will be more to continue those thoughts. I think a lot of this has to do with how do you and I look at freedom and liberty and what we have been promised government would supposedly give us, which was safety. Thanks for listening. Be seen.
This is video that just came into us. So this is unedited video. You can see people coming across the finish line there, and there is the explosion one and two. It appears almost as in they're in different places. We'll have to figure that out as we learn more about what happened here. But again, the explosion, the main one there at the Marathon Sports, and then you can hear after that, Paula, it's just absolutely heartbreaking to see this. This is video again just coming in. You see the marathon officials there reacting and getting those fences back so people can get out of the way.
For instance, right here in the blue jacket, that's Tommy Marr, who every year is the person who is the official there at the finish line. You can see him running off to police officers to the side to assist people. We do want to warn viewers as we take a look at this. This is raw video just coming into the newsroom, and we feel that it's important to get it out there and show it to you as quickly as possible, but we have not had a chance to edit this video yet. Lisa Hughes on the scene is describing what she describes a
Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Gardner Goldsmith here with you on the Liberty Radio Network, and that footage comes from WBZ TV, Channel 4 in Boston. It was broadcast at about 7 minutes after 3 this afternoon. Obviously, the topic I'm discussing, and big thanks to Ian for joining me from Free Talk Live on our first segment, and Ian had the opportunity to express some of his thoughts, and I really appreciate our opportunity to be able to hear his thoughts about this bomb attack in Boston at the end of the Boston Marathon route, which is right on Boylston Street, and is a place I've walked many, many times, late night, early morning, shot film there. As I mentioned, my sister lived right around the corner, but all these personal experiences are the types of things that people often say, oh, I knew someone, or I was there just when I wasn't there. I don't know what this this terror is like. I don't know what it's like to see the blood and the death and the crying and the screaming and the smoke and the pieces of things flying. I don't know what that's like, you know. But I think obviously we feel a lot of people feel very torn up about seeing something like this happen. And I try to hold on to those thoughts for quite a while before I try to go into any sort of political or philosophical analysis of this, even though that is really something that I have put upon myself to do. So welcome back to the program. Our phone number is 603-835-3360. You can also use Skype to contact me, and the Skype address is GARDNER.Goldsmith on Skype. In a couple segments, we will be joined by the founder of the Freedom Book Club. That is Ferb. He'll be talking to us from Utah. He's a former runner himself. I'm a runner. Not that that really has any pertinence to much of this, but in a way there is a facet of this that I do want to get into. That isn't so much about freedom, but just about human integrity, which applies to runners and all sorts of other people and so many other endeavors. It just so happens that this is what had attracted all the people who had come down there to see this event to see. So the Boston Marathon was ended early. They stopped it. They provided buses to the people along the running route to try to get them off the streets. These bombs... they said that they have found others. There have been reports that they found five other unexploded devices. There have been other reports that they found two, and other reports that they found three. All these little details are not necessarily window dressing, but they might not really be pertinent to the crux of where we as people who believe in freedom might want to go. And so we know some of the details about what happened just before 3 o'clock today in Boston. There are reports that two people were killed and 90 some people injured. It looks like there are probably more people who died. Boston Talk radio stations were covering one. There is only one Boston Talk radio station, and there is one Boston radio host who was on the air at the time. His name is Howie Carr, and he does a pretty decent job. He actually did a very good job today, and he's a fun guy to listen to usually, and he was real on the ball today covering this live. And so compliments to him and all the other people who have been watching this. Now, a couple things that I noted in the conversation with Ian, you can find at libertyconspiracy.com. As a libertarian, how do we look at this and say, okay, it's now incumbent on me to as a person who believes in freedom and believes in trying to provide my neighbor with the largest amount of freedom as he or she would like to have and what I would like to be allowed to have myself. How do we look at a situation like this within the context of what we expect the politicians are going to say and what the politicians have been telling us so far within the polis, the city-state? This is political. Boston is a political city. It is a city run by a government, i.e. the state in its generic sense. It is within the state of Massachusetts, again, a polis. So, and of course, it's in the United States. So what do we know about this type of an event, and what can we sort of assess from it? And as I mentioned to Ian, there are a number of things that I think are important to note. One is that Homeland Security hasn't stopped a single terrorist event in the United States. The FBI and Homeland Security have claimed that they have arrested people who were involved in terror plots. But when you look at those terror plots were started by the government agents who then entrapped people and recruited them into these plots. So I started to think about being there, because my brother has run two marathons. Again, you know, the fact that he's run marathons, it's no different than anybody who might have been walking down the street and going into the Dunkin' Donuts, which is right, you know, 50 yards away from there, or the restaurant that I ate at, which is literally at the bomb site about a year ago. Glenn Jacobs and my friend Malcolm and I ate at a restaurant that was 25 feet away, 30 feet away. All these things that connect with me personally aren't really necessarily important, but it gives me a sense of the verisimilitude of things. And so what do we know? We know that that area is, as I mentioned to Ian, one of the most highly policed public events in the United States, in North America, every year. Virtually almost every Boston cop that is available is along that parade route, along that running route. The resources that are utilized for that is the big thing next to the 4th of July in Boston, the Pops Esplanade event. In fact, this is probably bigger because it covers so much ground. And there are multiple towns involved with the security here. They clear out that street the night before. They set up the scaffolding before that. Then they clear out that street. Now, there are people who go there. I don't know whether or not they allow people to camp down near the area, but I don't think they do. I'm not sure. But one thing's for sure. They had bomb-sniffing dogs there. There was an exercise going on at the time. That has been confirmed. Now, the conspiracy theorists like Alex Jones are already saying, well, what they do is the plotters who present these false flag situations, they set up these drills so that if anybody actually catches the real perpetrators, then they can say, oh, it was just part of the drill, you know, as if the police might be the ones planting these bombs. That's the sort of mindset of Alex Jones. I want to look at this from the standpoint of somebody who believes in freedom and looks at what the government tells you it will provide and what it essentially can't provide, no matter what the cost, especially to your freedoms. We'll return at Liberty Conspiracy Radio. We reconvene. Thank you very much for listening to Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. LibertyConspiracy.com is the website. We also have our Facebook page. Follow me, Gardner Goldsmith, on Twitter. It's Gard Goldsmith on Twitter. Thanks very much for being part of the group of people who are interested in discussing freedom in many of its facets. And sadly, it's a tragic thing to hear about today, because we have to investigate freedom within the context of terrorist activities that have to do with us and anybody out there who has to deal with terrorist activities trying to stop them. How do we handle these sorts of things? What do we do? How do we look at people who want to cause damage and bring tragedy to others? So there are different ways to approach it, right? Right now, the traditional way so far is to approach it by saying it's got to be the state that protects you, right? Now, I want to read to you a bit of a news article from the Wall Street Journal about the events that happened today. Boston, two deadly explosions ripped through a crowd at the Boston Marathon on Monday, killing at least two people and injuring more than 110, once again raising the specter of terrorism on American soil. At about 2:50 p.m., some 3 hours after the winners had crossed the finish line, but while thousands more runners were still on the streets, two bombs exploded near the course's end in the city's crowded Back Bay section, Boston police said. So, once again, I want to play this audio for you very quickly and see what you derive from it, because there is something that I think if you had the opportunity to see this, you would also learn. Listen to this.
Are watching. This is video that just came into us. So this is unedited video. You can see people coming across the finish line there, and there is the explosion one and two. It appears almost as in they're in different places. We'll have to figure that out as we learn more about what happened here. But again, the explosion, the main one there at the Marathon Sports, and then you can hear after that, Paula, it's just absolutely heartbreaking to see this. This is video, again, just coming in. You see the marathon officials there reacting and getting those fences back so people can get out of the way.
For instance.
Okay, now, something to note here as a libertarian who believes that individuals coming together freely on their own can form their own associations without forcing their neighbors to protect, to pay for their own protection. That inherent illogic of the state. The state must exist in order to protect you. How does it exist? By threatening you. It doesn't work. If you watch video of this terrorist act, and this is not something to try to grind in or say that the police officers working there weren't trying to do their best or helping people. A lot of people helped a lot of people last night. What we were talking about here is the inherent nature of the state and what they have told us they would do, what they have not done, and what they can or cannot do in any way at all. And also, the way they express these things to us. What are we told all the time? Police and firefighters and the military are our so-called first responders. They're our first responders. If you watch this video, there is no doubt that what we are told about police being first responders is false. Factually, statistically, it is always false. Statistically, the people who respond first are the civilians who are close to an event, close to someone being injured, close to someone being attacked by someone else. The police, as they say, when seconds count, the police are just minutes away. Here you have an event on Boylston Street in Massachusetts, in Boston, which is the center, the very center of Boston. And believe me, it's not City Hall, it's not the North End, it's not the Back Bay, and it's not even Fenway Park. It is Boylston Street in front of the Prudential Center and the Hancock Tower. That's the center of Boston, right there. In the very center of the city of Boston, on April 15th, and we can talk about conspiracy theories about tax day or whatever, but what do we as people who believe in freedom look at? We look at, what were we told that the government would do, and what can it do? We're not accusing these people of malfeasance or doing crappy jobs or whatever, but what is the possible thing that they can do. It's just not possible that police can actually be the first responders. And if you watch this video, you'll see they weren't. The first people helping other people, getting over those fences along that route, and I'm looking at the screen myself right now, and you can watch this audio, you can watch this video footage, the audio of which I just played a couple times here. You will see the people inside there helping other people are civilians, because the cops are all wearing police uniforms, and so are the officials who are the paramedics. They're not there yet. It's civilians. The first responder is a civilian. Now, as I said, that event had probably the highest percentage of police officers in it that you could possibly find. Probably the most. And I thought to myself, okay, the literal impossibility of true security, and you'll find this at libertyconspiracy.com, that even the most dedicated police officers and politicians can attempt to provide. That area near the finish line is one of the most policed areas of any sporting event in the world. Yet this did happen. So I started to consider the question like this. You might think about the percentage of cops per thousands on that street. At what level of officers in a ratio of officers per civilians on that street, does one think that there would have been a different outcome here? And I don't say that with any sort of rancor towards anybody's beliefs. It's just a matter of reality. That if killers wanted to kill people, even 1,000 more cops couldn't have stopped it. So then, what do you think about? Well, how many more cops would it have taken? Could they have really stopped this? Because you can construct, as I mentioned on the website, libertyconspiracy.com, you can construct bicycles with pipe bombs in their frames and park them places. You can infiltrate the piping of the stands and the tents and replace sections with pipes loaded with explosives. You can detonate bombs planted high up on the sides of buildings, loaded with metals to cause terrible damage. And all this takes you back to one insight, which is that there are, most often, reasons for terrorist attacks. So if you can't really affect anything by adding more police, by turning things into a police state, which they've already tried to do and they haven't stopped one terrorist attack in America, they're trying it and they're not getting the effect they want. They're not stopping the terrorist attacks. Then what other factors in the equation can you change to try to get to a more peaceful outcome? What are they? What are the things you can change? They've already tried to change the police presence. It's not doing it. It hasn't done it. How much more can you spend to try to affect that part of the equation? It hasn't affected it already. What are other parts of the equation? So I wrote on Liberty Conspiracy, I said, I don't want to sound like a bleeding heart when I say this. As a mathematical construct, if one cannot really stop terrorists who are hell-bent on killing, then one can try to reduce the likelihood that people will be inspired to kill. What can you do to affect that change? Now, there are a lot of killers. They don't have reasons inspired by things that we can pinpoint as triggers. Some people are just crazy. Maybe. But many terrorists do. In fact, all of the terrorists connected with the so-called war on terror on Islamofascism have had reasons, and they've explicitly stated them. And they have to do with government policies. So with most of political terrorism, what factor can you change to try to change the behavior of people who might want to kill others? That's what I want to explore. We'll be joined by Ferb coming up. Hope you'll check out some of the folks backing us up.
That's Tommy Maher, who every year is the person who is the official there at the finish line. You can see him running off to police off with police officers to the side to assist people. We do want to warn viewers as we take a look at this. This is raw video just coming into the newsroom, and we feel that it's important to get it out there and show it to you as quickly as possible. But we have not had.
Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio, 603-835-3360, or you can Skype me. It's GARDNER.Goldsmith on Skype. That's GARDNER. Goldsmith on Skype. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Thanks very much for being part of the conspiracy. It's good to have you here. And now, obviously, continuing our conversation about the bombing attacks in Boston, the terrorist attacks, it appears, in Boston, where at least two people are killed, possibly 12 people have died, definitely one confirmed death, an 8-year-old child. Want to get more of the libertarian perspective on the event and what it inspires people to consider. Now I turn to the founder of the Freedom Book Club, found at freedombookclub.com and Freedom Book Club on Twitter. He is Ferb, and he's speaking to us from none other than Utah. Ferb, how you doing, buddy?
It's a sad day, man.
Hey, thank you very much for joining us. I'd love to get your thoughts on this, and as you know, my perspective on this is I had to start to approach it as a political commentator rather than just a guy watching it and feeling emotions. Your approach on this and your take on what we're told the state will do for us and what the state has done so far regarding terrorism and innocent lives being taken over things that they might not have been responsible for starting.
Just to put a human perspective on it, I know that it's a sad day, and I actually grew up in the same town where Johnny Kelly lives.
Yeah,
living.
And if people aren't familiar with Johnny Kelly, famous, the whole Kelly family, famous year after year after year. Johnny Kelly running the marathon with his son, who did he have cerebral palsy, I believe.
I don't know anything about his son. Johnny Kelly actually won the marathon a couple of times.
Yeah.
But he ran it every year, even though he was, 78 years old, and the guy was still running a marathon,
Yeah, yeah.
He was a regular. The guy whose son had cerebral palsy.
That's right.
He's still running, and he pushes the guy in the wheelchair. The kid actually has, this is a separate person, I'm not sure what his name is, but the son, even though he has severe handicaps, it's not a mental handicap. The kid has graduated, I believe it's from SMU.
Yes, that's right. I'm glad you reminded me, yeah. It's amazing to see all the different figures who have been down there. And I mentioned my brother ran the marathon a couple times, and you're familiar with the mindset behind people who are runners and very intensely athletic. One of the interesting things that has sprung out of this is the story about a number of runners who, when they crossed the finish line, continued and ran to Mass General Hospital and hung out there, got some food, and then waited so they could donate blood to help people out because they knew there were going to be a lot of victims. That's amazing,
yeah,
to think of.
This is amazing. Amazing people. I know my mother-in-law is a marathoner, my father-in-law, and there are lots of marathoners from the Cape where I grew up. And the people have heart. No matter how I disagree with them on politics, they have heart, and it's just a sad thing that has happened here.
Yeah.
But what we're getting back to is, what could have been done to prevent this?
Right.
An action by the state, and in the generic, as in the government, could a state action have prevented this? I don't think so, except for probably the existence of the state pissing someone off.
Yes, precisely. And that's what I seem to be thinking about. I tried to put that mathematical equation together, and I said, look, they've tried to increase factor A here, which is increased police presence, increased burden on taxpayers, decrease of individual freedoms, and we have not seen any more safety coming out from the state. And this shows it right here.
No, it shows it. And when you increase area security in one area, the people that are targeting civilians are going to find a softer target.
Right.
They're not going to go to the airport because there's too much risk. It's too involved. They're going to look for a softer target. I mean, look what happened back in Beirut in the 80s when Reagan sent troops over to Lebanon. They started bombing discos and things like that. They're choosing soft targets. They're not choosing military targets for obvious reasons.
That's right. Absolutely.
They're looking because they're hurting. They can't, that whoever these people are, I mean, I've heard rumors that this is actually domestic terrorist action, but I, you know, that's hearsay. But, you know, it's because they can't compete militarily. No matter what group it is, if they're resorting to terrorist tactics, it's because they can't compete militarily, so they're going to choose a soft target to cause injury and death, to cause pain, because that's what they're feeling.
Yeah.
They want you to understand that they're feeling pain.
Right, and it's unfortunate that people in the neocon area, people who are in the GOP debates, when a guy like Ron Paul has brought up why... the reasons, the very reasons that many of the foreign terrorists have attacked American civilians, they boo him. Evidently, they don't want to hear the reality. They don't want to hear the actual facts of the case, that if one were a scientist, and supposedly politics is political science, which I always thought was bogus. I don't think you can make a science out of it. Supposedly, if you're dealing with the, you know, the results of political actions, or at least you're forming politically based laws, then one would want to know what sort of responses those laws were inspiring. And the responses have been, on the whole, very negative because there are bad things happening to people in the Middle East. If it is, let's say, a domestic terrorist sort of thing, then again, even there, you know, let's say...
It's still pullback.
Yes, and this is one of the things that the statists don't want to hear, and it's going to sound... maybe a little bit risky to say for, but if, let's say Chris Matthews, who came out early this afternoon blaming Tea Party people and blaming libertarian types to say, well, they don't like it, they don't like the growth of the government, they don't like the government at all, they're radicals. I'm paraphrasing his sort of dialogue, you know, his sort of monologues. But
he's... What? Scott Brown put these bombs under the bleachers, or what?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. He's there. Well, yeah, Scott Brown, clearly not a Tea Partier. But, you know, if you're, where do you take Rand Paul or someone like that, you know? But his whole approach is they don't like the government, and April 15th is tax day. So this indicates that it was probably more domestic terrorism. Okay, well, you know, Chris Matthews, he gets paid for making these sorts of things, you know, for saying these sorts of things. He has to fill time. Okay, fine. He didn't couch it by saying, you know, it's not really a time to be speculating like this, but this is what I get paid to do. I'm sorry to bring this up. So he just goes forward because he hates the Tea Party type people and he hates libertarians too. Okay, fine. I get it.
Yeah, well, Chris Matthews has really strong ties to the Boston area.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sad because didn't he work for Tip O'Neill?
Yes, he did. He worked for Tip O'Neill, one of the most liberal members of Congress. And then, of course, he went on and was a supposed journalist for many years, and now he's being exposed as a total left wing hack. But the thing that gets me about it, and the thing that I was thinking about, Ferb, was this: you know, if we are to address his sort of speculation, which you know maybe is not something that would be requisite of libertarians here, but I think it would be wise for us to look at this because these things are opening up now, and we say to ourselves, okay, as we mentioned and you mentioned, blowback, we've seen it from the Middle East, and if they say that this is a response from so-called domestic terrorists, then again, let's look at the mathematical equation. And I don't want to sound like I am supporting domestic terrorism any more than I would be supporting foreigners being terrorists to try to express their frustrations by killing innocent people. But
yeah, I'm preaching on, brother.
Yeah, but if we look at this on a factual basis, as we said, if we lay this out as a math problem and we say we want the other side of the equal sign to equal a safer society, then what factors do we have in this simple arithmetic that we can change? Well, they've already tried to change the police thing. Okay. Then, as we said, then what else is there? Well, you can't necessarily change the minds of psychotics. But a lot of these people who are committing these terrorist acts are not necessarily psychotic. What they are is, as we said, they're angry about government policies. Now, maybe they'd find excuses for doing these things anyway. But my guess is you would see less if the government was not engaged in initiating the action against so many people. Can you stick around, Ferb?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. We'll come back with Ferb. Want to give him an opportunity to offer his ideas with more time. We'll return. Hour number two of Liberty Conspiracy Radio is here for you. At the Liberty Radio Network, I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Thanks very much for being here, listening, wherever you might be calling your home. Whatever time zone you call home, you're part of the conspiracy. Our phone number is 603-835-3360, or you can use Skype to contact me. It's Gardner, G-A-R-D-N-E-R dot Goldsmith. On Skype. I hope you'll visit our website. Gardner Goldsmith is there all the time, and so are so many other fellow freedom fighters. It's libertyconspiracy.com. You can find our podcast. The latest one features some really interesting insights from Sophia from the UK about the death of Margaret Thatcher. I got a terrific response from someone who said it was a very insightful interview. I hope you can find it at Podomatic, at iTunes. Just look up Liberty Conspiracy, or you can go to our website, and the player is embedded right there, and it usually has the last 15 to 20 of our podcasts there. It's a specialty podcast, not broadcast on the radio, and I hope you can find it. We've had a lot of people responding very positively to it. And on the positive side, on this day in the Northeast, in the United States, particularly in Boston, where so much tragedy has been wrought upon people, I want to bring in once more a guy who always makes me feel really up and upbeat. He's the founder of the Freedom Book Club, which, by the way, gave its Book of the Year award a little while ago and presented it in person. We'll talk to him about that. But right now, I want to talk to him about the events in Boston and how we as people who believe in not only ensuring freedom but expanding the purview of freedoms can look and assess some of the things that happened in this tragic and terrible crime that was perpetrated today in Boston at the Boston Marathon. He's Ferb. He's the founder of the Freedom Book Club. Ferb, thanks for sticking around another segment, brother. Oh, wait a minute, my man. I got to bring you over on a system. Hey, there you go. Sorry, buddy. What was that?
I said it's great to be talking with you, especially since I need to commiserate. I love the Boston Marathon. I think it's one of the most amazing events that you can witness.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's awful that this has happened.
Yeah.
But really, if you think about marathoning, it is an individual pursuit.
Yeah.
And this whole thing just is an affront to individualism.
It is in many ways. It stands against all the efforts of those people who worked for month after month after month to try to do that 26-plus-mile course, and
it's not like anybody can run this. You have to qualify for the Boston Marathon.
That's right.
You have to run another race and do well enough so that you can qualify, and there's not that many qualifying races. People who run the Boston Marathon and actually have, like, their bib and stuff, they have worked their butts off to get there.
Yeah.
And whoever did this, shame on you.
Yeah, it's a disgusting thing, and the lives of the people who have been taken, it boggles my mind to think that someone could go after innocent people, kids. There was an 8-year-old kid who was killed, you know, and it's just bizarre to me. And Ferb, the thing that gets me is, as we were mentioning before, the terrorists, if this is, you know, some sort of foreigner, the arguments that they've given have been that, well, the civilians are the ones who back the actions of the U.S. government. So until the civilians learn, you know, we're told that the government is us. And how wonderful is that? How wonderful is that? Yet the government has failed to protect us, and the civilians are the ones who are getting attacked on the whole. And there's a problem in that equation, which we tried to address in the last hour. And I'll go back to that in a little while. But I want to get some more of your thoughts about this and offer you the opportunity, Ferb, to and by the way, folks, go to freedombookclub.com to tell people some more of your thoughts about what you saw today, police, security, freedom, and attacks on people's lives.
Well, one thing that's popped into my head, which I brought up with a number of people, is, you know, Mitt Romney, former governor of Massachusetts, where this horrible tragedy has taken place, he wants America to be exceptional. But what I don't think anybody in public office at that level, the president, for many years have thought about is why on earth does the American government need such a huge military apparatus? I mean, seriously, if Mitt Romney is running a company that needs this much security, what are they doing to piss off all the people in society?
Boy, is that a great statement.
Why don't we address those, not this we stuff, because why doesn't the government address what it's doing to cause so many people to be so upset with it that they need tanks, nukes, B-52s, B-1 bombers, stealth technology, and all this other stuff that they have at their disposal?
Yeah.
The drones. Why do we need all this stuff? What are you doing to make people so mad?
Well, you brought up a great point last week when we chatted, Ferb, when you mentioned how I believe it was Ron Paul talked about all the bases in the United States versus all the sovereign nations in the United States, and there are only about 20 that don't have U.S. military bases on them, or something like that. Is that correct?
Something to that effect. Yeah, it's a huge preponderance of foreign countries that have a United States military presence in their borders.
Incredible. It's like 195 that exist and like 175 that have U.S. bases on their soil or near their borders, right?
Yeah, I mean, what would happen if China wanted to open a military base in, you know, San Mateo County, California? You know? Come on.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. We've freak out.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, people might look at this as being sort of saccharine or sort of bleeding heart to say, oh, well, you're not, you guys, you know, you're just utopian and you're thinking that everyone can get along, peace, love, and I want to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony and give them a Coca-Cola, you know. But really, what we're, at least what I'm trying to do is address what we've been told as the reasons for attacks. And Ferb, I know you saw something that you wanted to mention to people you thought was a pretty worthwhile thing to bring up to them as well. I want to give you just go ahead and keep talking about some of your thoughts.
Well, that was the big point that I had was, you know, what is the government doing to make everyone so upset?
Yeah.
And that really takes examination from those in government. And I withdraw. I do not consent to what they're doing. And I've made that perfectly clear. So please, if you're a terrorist and considering targeting me here in Salt Lake City, go somewhere else.
Right. Yeah, leave me alone. Just leave me alone.
Just leave me alone, because I have withdrawn my support. I do not consent to anything that the government does.
Right, and you're trying in many ways to stop it.
Yes, and I, you know, all I can do is educate.
Yes.
The first thing that needs to happen is education. You know, it may be a pipe dream to say, you know, we're going to live in a voluntary society someday, but it's a worthy goal, and the means are the ends currently. If you're using coercive means to reach an objective which is not coercive, you're not going to end up in the right place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. You mentioned that you found something that you wanted to tell folks about.
I can't get at that right now.
Okay. All right. Well, for
so I will maybe in the next segment I can get that up.
All right, that sounds great. While I have the opportunity, Ferb, I sort of want to continue on the theme that we brought up just briefly, and I know we might have our sponsors pop in real quick too, but, you know, the accusation that this could have been homegrown terrorism, that's a sort of a blithe and, I think, simplistic statement that overlooks what I mentioned before, that equation, that if you want to get more safety on the right side of that equal sign, if you're going left to right in an arithmetic equation, if you want to get more safety for people, and you've tried to affect one of the mathematical equation factors, which is increasing the presence of the government, the burden of the government, the size of the government, the number of police officers on those streets, on Boylston Street, in Boston, how high do you have to make that factor before you think you're actually going to get safety? Because right now, they're not getting it. So then I thought, what other things in the equation can you affect? Because that one isn't causing, isn't bringing about the salutary effects that they want. So I say, well, are there other things? Okay, can we look at the arguments that are posed or the reasons that the terrorists give so far in the 2000s? Every one of them has had to do with government policies. And again, as I'm making my point, we're going to be going to the commercial, so I'm going to be a bit abbreviated in it. But then if we look at supposed homegrown terrorists, then there are certain things that are causing or inspiring many of them. On April 15th, yes, could it be government thievery? Could it be? We'll return.
Once I had my heroes, once I had my all of that is changed now. Get the things inside out. Truth is not that comfortable, no. And mother taught us patience, the virtues of restraint. And father taught us boundaries. They always we'll be right back.
Rolling along, Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. Gardner Goldsmith here with you, and we are people who believe in freedom. Ferb was chatting with us. He'll be back on with us shortly, and I want to sort of expound on something. In fact, he recommended that I do so. The calculus of safety. So I'll offer you the opportunity if you want to weigh in. You can also email me at libertyconspiracy@yahoo.com. You can call 603-835-3360, or you can Skype me at Gardner, G-A-R-D-N-E-R, .Goldsmith on Skype. Now, there are a couple things that I'd like to mention before I get further into the calculus of safety. Now, oftentimes people look at something called the calculus of freedom. But right now, for the people who might not be libertarians, who might be more inclined to say, I would be very willing to sacrifice a certain amount of freedom for safety. Well, that's something that we would never do as libertarians. So I want to go into this calculus, but first I want to talk about, for those people who want to have the safety and they're not necessarily concerned with the liberty, what I'd like to do is address that for them. Because for me, the liberty is paramount. And for me, with liberty comes greater safety. For me, the state is already an infringement on my safety. I'm never safe because the state exists. My stuff is always going to possibly be taken. It's up to the state to decide how much they want to take. And my freedom and actual freedom of movement are always at risk because the state can decide to take my freedoms. Now, some people could say, even if you got rid of the state, you would have various clans or various entities or groups of people combining to fight against each other and take each other's stuff and restrict each other's freedoms. Maybe that's possible. But if you look at history in those areas that have not had the state, that did not happen. And if you look at society today, in the areas outside of the state where we engaged each other and continue to engage each other in private affairs, conversation, transactions, free market exchange, romance, even our silent contemplative lives on our own, that is all non-government controlled. Those all operate not incentivized or de-incentivized by government positives or government negatives. The main drivers behind the free market, the main drivers behind our social interactions, our love affairs, our conversations, our good times, are our own interests and not the interests of politicians who make the rules that supposedly we would make up ourselves. If that's the case, we don't need the politicians to make them, do we? No, politicians make rules that we would not make ourselves. That is one of the definitions of government. And those, by definition, are contrary to the well-being of people. Because if people wanted those rules, they could make them up themselves. So, if you look at history, anarchic states do not devolve into constant predation on person on person or group upon group. The state of nature, as John Locke expressed it in his, actually he expressed it in the first treatise of government and expanded on in the second treatise of government, his idea of the state of nature as a state of constant predation and aggression is incorrect. The state of the state is the state of constant aggression and predation because there is one entity that has the legal power to do it, the government, and the excuses that it gives and that people like John Locke gave, and he was incorrect, as admirable as he was as a philosopher, those excuses that they give are incorrect. They hide the fact that the state is the predator, that the state is the one that opens up a state of war, as he called it, against the individual. So, how do we as freedom lovers look at events where we say there could be a better approach? Do we criticize the people who were there trying to help others, or do we say, no, let's look for those people who would like to have, you don't have to be philosophically inclined to want to have greater freedom all the time. You could be just emotionally inclined to want to have greater safety. So let's look at the calculus of safety. The calculus of safety, if you want to have a greater, safer society, as I said, there are certain factors. What are those factors? Societal interactions, shunning, and, in many people's minds, the police, the supposed first responders. Well, we have addressed the fact, and it is prima facie obvious, that police are not the first responders. More crimes are stopped by civilians every year than by police. Civilians are the first responders, and don't ever forget that. Second, the increase of police presences has not stopped terrorist activities. Third, the existence of police actions domestically and in foreign affairs inspires people, no matter whether we think these people are right or they're wrong, to resent the actions of the state, in this case, the U.S. government. Foreign terrorists, every one of them that has stated a reason for attacking Americans, have stated that they are responding to the actions of the federal government. And those are not just them throwing out bombast. These are personal communications from one to another. These are communications in front of juries. Every one of them that has spoken out for a reason has said not that they just want to kill American civilians, but that American civilians are supporting a government, which is supposedly their government, which is killing innocent civilians overseas. In addition to that, domestically, we look at accusations by people like Chris Matthews saying, well, this is probably domestic terrorism. It's April 15th. It's tax day. This is also Patriots Day. It's a big day for the so-called Patriot movement. Now, we as libertarians and anarcho-capitalists and people like that, we deal in the philosophical abstracts of peace, history, free market economics, and intellectual rigor. Chris Matthews is a clown. He couldn't stand for 5 minutes in a room of libertarians. He'd be laughed out of the place. We are people who try to deal honestly with one another and try to present information that can be useful to people. That people can say, I'll weigh that. I'll think about that. Let me look at the historical evidence. Let me think of that logically. So the calculus of safety, if we also include possible domestic terrorists and we say, well, if you want to affect a more safe society, a safer society, and you've already increased the police presence and it hasn't done anything, on that street of thousands, they had thousands of police officers. Let's say they had 700 police officers. Would 1,700 have stopped this? Let's say they had 1,000. Would 2,000 have stopped this? I don't know. I doubt it. As we said, the terrorists will find ways to kill people. They'll find other ways to put the bombs together. They'll pose as police officers. They'll do anything they can. There are ways that they will kill people. So what factors can you change? And again, not to sound like a Panglossian, but what factors can you change for the domestic, potential domestic terrorists? Not all of them will have their minds changed, but there's something to which they are responding. What is it? Is it the fact that they, like the foreigners, are feeling like they are being attacked, especially on a day like April 15th, when in fact they've had their stuff stolen from them?
Thursday in the afternoon, for a couple of beers, then a game of pool. We used to go to a motel across the street. Then the name of the motel was the Wagon Wheel. She said, come on, she said, why don't you come back to my house? She said, my husband's out of town, you know he's gone till the end of the month. Well, I was just so nervous. was so nervous, you know, I couldn't really quite relax. Cause I was never really quite sure when a husband was coming back. One of the neighbors, they saw my car. Then they told her, yeah, they told her, they think they know who you are. Well, her husband, he's a violent man, a very violent and jealous man. Now I have to leave this town, I gotta leave while I still can. Should have kept it every Thursday in the afternoon, for a couple of beers in a game of pool. We should have kept it every Thursday in the afternoon, for a couple of beers in a game of pool. She was pretty good too.
We continue Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. Gardner Goldsmith here with you. Hope I've been expressing these things in a cogent manner as we look at the events of the Boston Marathon bombings. Other things I did want to bring up, there are some other news stories that are out there. There's actually a hilarious of a guy out in California getting people to videotaping people as they sign a petition to eliminate the Second Amendment. Some of the things that he says to them as he's getting them to sign the petition. I would love to play that for you tonight. Don't know whether we'll be able to do that. Also, the justices of the Supreme Court are ready to take up the question of whether human genes can be patented. And that very interesting case is something that I'd love to discuss on a future story. It involves intellectual property and the buttresses supposedly provided by the government for people who like to have their intellectual property protected, but that basically grants a government-granted monopoly on folks for their intellectual property. Libertarians like to look at these things and say, if you get rid of government, would people still produce things? Would they still try to get things out of the market if they knew that their product could be reverse-engineered and copied? It would be much better for consumers to be able to get stuff cheaper with competing entities putting things out, but would people still have the incentives to put those things out there in the market if they didn't have the exclusive ability to sell them? Very interesting stuff. Libertarians think about this a lot, and we're just probably not going to have the opportunity to do so tonight, but I hope you tune into another program. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and on the line with me still is Ferb from Utah. Ferb, I did just want to mention, just as we came out of those commercials, you know, the end of my little syllogism there was about domestic terrorists, supposed domestic terrorists, as they are labeled, the idea that we can see that if you want to change the one factor for foreign terrorists to possibly provide for a safer society, what you might want to do is address the actual reasons that they have provided for their terrorism, which have to do with U.S. policies in the Middle East. And if there could possibly be a similar thing that you can do with domestic terrorists, what are the reasons that domestic terrorists might be attacking the United States? Well, if this is a domestic terrorist attack on April 15th, then it could possibly have something to do with the taxation of the government. Now, some people say, well, that's just something that has to be done. Other people might look at it as legally sanctioned theft. And in the abstract sense, one is supposed to be able to defend himself against theft, even if it's a large group of people who are stealing from you and they have the guns of the law behind them. But in this case, this is a person who has killed civilians. And if it is domestic terrorism, we can look at other domestic, so-called domestic terrorism acts and say, this one's slightly different. Can you tell us a little bit about your thoughts about this, if it is a domestic terrorist attack, and some of the things that you mentioned to me off the air that it got your mind firing for?
Yeah, well, if you look at this attack on the Boston Marathon, it's directed at the crowd, at the Boston Athletic Association. It's unclear as to what the target of this attack is. In all the other instances that I can think of domestic terrorism, the target was very, very clear. Like Joe Stack, he attacked the IRS building in Austin, Texas with his airplane. He crashed it in there because he was being attacked by the IRS. They were taking his money. They were going to take everything he had. So he's like, I'm done with this. I'm just going to take out as many people as I can because I'm done fighting.
Yep.
And as you look at what happened in Oklahoma City, that was a clear attack by the perpetrators of that attack on the Justice Department.
Yep.
In retribution for the attack that was perpetrated on the people in Waco.
Yes, yes, that's absolutely correct.
This is definitely clear as mud. I mean, what's the target? And as far as I know, nobody's claimed responsibility for this attack.
Now, we can point out that within those government buildings, there were civilians, lots of civilians. And it's very difficult for people who believe in freedom for us to try to explain to people, look, within the context of pure logic and philosophy, it is correct to say that if you are working for the government and you're getting paid through the system, that in the abstract, you are the recipient of ill-gotten goods. You are the recipient of government-sanctioned theft, majority-sanctioned theft, and that is ill-gotten. But that is a very difficult thing to try to explain to people as possible motivation for some of these people who carried out violent attacks. And in the Murrow building, there were innocent kids. There were civilians walking in the building. So, the way that the government is laid out, it's virtually impossible for some of these so-called domestic terrorists, if they have a gripe specifically against the government, they have tried to target government buildings, but they have potentially harmed, killed innocent people. But it does seem to be that this is different. Like you say, this was specifically targeting civilians on the side of the road, and we don't know the motivation, but if this was some sort of a domestic thing, then you say, this is different than the other attacks that were specifically targeted on government buildings.
Yeah, where is Bob from Sesame Street when you need him to sing a song about people in your neighborhoods?
Yeah.
These things doesn't belong.
Yes, exactly. The postman's a person in your neighborhood. I like Bob. And we're treading on very, very difficult territory because...
it's a really touchy subject. I mean, I was reading this book called New World Rising, The Quest for Human Freedom in the 21st Century, by Tom DeLorenzo.
Yeah.
Actually got a foreword by Gary Chartier as well, mm-hmm. the professor of California. Anyway, in this book, Tom DeLorenzo talks about Joe Stack. And the reason Joe Stack did what he did is Joe Stack justified in attacking the IRS, even though the person that he killed may have been a civilian contractor or whatever. His attack is against the organization.
Right.
And, domestic foreign terrorists have attacked organizations and buildings associated with organizations,
mm-hmm.
such as the Pentagon, the World Trade Center, and there's been clearly delineated targets where they feel justified, and I can somewhat understand why they did what they did.
Yeah.
I don't understand this attack. So, to me, it smacks of another animal that has not previously been known to attack.
That's an excellent observation, Ferb. Now let's combine that and stray a little bit further towards the conspiracy theory side, just to acknowledge some of the things that they've been saying today, and maybe acknowledging those things is really, really not constructive. But I think we do need to mention that folks like Alex Jones did bring up a very salient point, which was that it has been confirmed that there was a supposed drill on the use of bomb-sniffing dogs at the start and finish line of the Boston Marathon today. Now,
yeah,
and so Alex Jones, a very strong conspiracy-minded guy, he had been warning that around this time there would be some false flag event that the government staged in order to try to bring about greater government power over the freedoms of individuals. Now, I happen to disagree with him, but his argument is, I think that there's a possibility the government might do false flag operations, but in this case, what I'm saying is, I'm not going to accuse any sort of government conspiracy here, but he does, and he says that what they'll do on these things is they put these drills together so that if some civilian or someone watching happens to uncover the plot, the real plot, and the government people, he says, are the ones who are behind it, if they uncover this, then the government can say, oh, it was just part of the drill, you see. You see, and that to me, that's just such Byzantine thinking. I'm just sitting there like, man, you should write spy novels, dude, because you know what I mean? That's like, what?
My mind would never go there.
Yeah.
But I think the best of people, generally speaking, but maybe I'm a sucker.
Well, I don't think you are, Ferb. We have one more segment. Can you come back? I don't know if you can stick around.
Yes, I can stick around.
Okay, great. Ferb will be with us. Folks, visit the website. I want to make sure I mention it. It's FreedomBookClub.com. FreedomBookClub.com. I want to talk to Ferb about the Book of the Year Award presentation when we come back. Welcome back to the program, Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and thanks very much for sticking around with us, and thanks also to our friend in Utah, a fellow conspirator, Ferb. He's talking to us from a place that is a different time zone, but he is a member of the conspiracy. Ferb, thanks a lot for sticking around, buddy.
It's good to be here.
Absolutely great to have you here. Ferb, want to sort of round off some of the conversation we were having about the killings in Boston today, around 10 minutes of 3 on Boylston Street, and we're talking about possible domestic terrorism and the reasons. And again, and I just want to address something once more, which is on a philosophical level, everybody, if you have the right to your life, if you have the right to exist, and rights are really the term right is a term that is applied to some sort of facet of your life which, because of repeated iterations of human interaction over the years, people have come to a sort of a general agreement that there are certain things that are off limits, like you have a right to exist, I have a right to exist. It's called negative reciprocity. If you want to go by John Locke, it was brought to you by God. If you want to go by other folks, maybe in the libertarian circles, it's just something that arose because people found that this facilitated more peaceful interaction and greater, better living standards, a more peaceful interaction. So you have a right to live, I have a right to live. You have a right to defend your life. Otherwise, your right to live is really not a right to live. And I do, too. You have a right to defend yourself. And if you are to survive, you have to be able to retain the fruits of your labor. So you have a right to the fruits of your labor, because otherwise your life is suspect if you can't retain the fruits of your labor, which supports your life. It's all very – it's a logical syllogism. Ferb, am I off base here so far?
No, it's right on.
Okay. All right. Right, okay. So the next part is an infringement on your ability to retain the fruits of your labor or to peacefully work with someone who is agreeing to employ you. Restrictions on that are restrictions on your ability to live. Infringements of the principle of the right to life and the right to one's property to support one's life. So therefore, you are being aggressed against. You are being attacked. Now, on a principled level, I've been ready to do this in any debate. If I were to be in a debate, I would ask someone and say, if I did not want to pay the taxes that you wanted to force me to pay, Mr. Politician, would you engage the government to come and wield weapons, brandish weapons, to threaten me to pay? Well, yes, I would. Because why? You'd be breaking the law. Of course I would. Oh, I see. So I can take that as a threat right now, and therefore I would be justified to defend myself. In the abstract, am I correct, Ferb, or am I incorrect?
In the abstract, yes, but if you actually try to put that into practice, your life expectancy becomes very, very short.
Absolutely. And within the realms of the public image, a lot of people don't really want to think about it on those terms. They are comfortable.
People don't want to see the gun in the room.
Exactly.
They would just assume that, you know, 2 + 2 = 5.
Right. So they look at us as the aggressive ones when we mention that we would be justified in defending ourselves against politicians who are engaged in passing legislation or have passed legislation or are even threatening to pass legislation to engage police officers to come and take the fruits of our labor or to restrict our freedoms. They look at us as the aggressive ones, when in fact, as we can point out, we're the defending ones.
You know, people have called me an extremist. I'm like, well, I'm not the one that's using the gun.
Exactly. Exactly.
Guys, you guys are advocating the use of force to cause me to do what you want me to do when I don't want to.
Exactly. That is precisely right.
That's the way it should be.
And your non-action is not an aggressive action. Non-action is not action. It is, by nature, it is peaceful. So,
yes.
What do we then see?
Okay.
Right. If we look at these domestic terrorists, and again, this is not a position to promote any of the actions of anyone taking some sort of engaging in violent activities against members of the state or people who are in buildings of the state or anything like that, or people that...
One thing I think we really need to mention here is the thing that Gandhi mentioned, which was only love can conquer hate, which was copied by Marvin Gaye.
That's a great point. Only love can conquer
hate.
Right, and that's why we in the libertarian movement, especially anarcho-capitalism and voluntarism and agorism, we say, look, you could, in the abstract, in principle, you could be justified. You can make a justifiable, logical argument to engage in those sorts of activities against agents of the state, and you wouldn't even be preempting. You would be defending because they would already be engaged in aggression against you, and anybody who wants to find out, just decide to withhold your taxes, and you'll find out who's been initiating aggression against you and who's going to come and show you that aggression. But we who are involved in this for the long term, we say, you know, it's not constructive, and it will bring about the death of innocent people because it's very hard to sift out the people who are engaged in the aggression, the people who indirectly support it, and the people who might have voted for politicians who support it. So we try to be peaceful all the way, even though we would be you know, justified in defending ourselves, we need to be peaceful. And we argue, we debate, we offer options, we give people ideas, and we say, please, listen to our concepts, listen to our ideas. We hope these sound valid to you. So when I look at, you know, an event like this and I hear, you know, speculation that it could be some sort of an anti-government force, it makes me downhearted to think that someone could be driven to that sort of thing, to kill innocent people. It's really terrible. And I say, is there a way to affect change enough that some of those people would not engage in that violence? And where can you affect that change? And the only way that you can do it is by changing the government policy, I think.
Well, you could just stop. I mean, I encourage everyone to divest from death, to use a term coined by Jim Davidson. Divest from death. Do everything you can to minimize aggression in your life.
Wow.
Perpetrating violence is antithetical to life. It's an anti-life statement. So I prefer people to think about what they're doing. Try and lessen the amount of aggression on yourself and on other people, and live peaceably.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Not that you're going to stand up. Not that standing up to the government isn't a noble cause when they're causing harm. But when you attack a group of people like this, if this is an act of domestic, if this is an act by domestic or by American citizens, this is counterproductive to what you want if you're looking to minimize government involvement in your life.
Absolutely. And if that's just where people want to measure, and of course, you know, we measure it on the moral scale as well, taking innocent lives and engaging in violence and things like that. It's just not part of our makeup. But if we have to study it on that level, then, you know, that's what we'll do. Ferb, I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about some of the actions of the Freedom Book Club recently. You did some great stuff with the recipient of this year's Book of the Year Award, L. Neal Smith, right?
That's correct. Yes, I traveled from Salt Lake City to Fort Collins, Colorado, to present the Book of the Year Award to the man himself. And we got together at a place called Gordy's Barbecue in Fort Collins, which is fantastic. If you ever get a chance to go there, it's run by libertarians, and the meat is superb.
That sounds like a good time, man. Colorado, gorgeous place. Mention the name of the place once more. Maybe a few people might stop by.
It's actually Gordy's Barbecue. It's on College Street, and it is fantastic.
Awesome.
There's a lot of good places to eat there, and I will be posting photos of my trip on Facebook if you want to check them out.
That's great.
I had a lot of fun. It was great to have a conversation with L. Neal Smith. There was about 24 people there to celebrate with him as he received the award. It did actually increase the award for the winners, the authors. They are now receiving a half gram of gold along with a token of our appreciation.
Wow, that's terrific.
With a plaque, a half gram of gold. And he had a photographer there from the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership who photographed the event. And there is an event page on Facebook. So you can check out the video that was taken and the images that were captured there. It was an amazing event, and there's a lot of great people there.
This is great. Okay, so they can go to the Facebook page?
Yeah, if you go to Freedom Book Club's Facebook page, there's a link to the event that L. Neal Smith set up. Which is how the event was coordinated.
Okay, great. And why don't you mention the book once more as we head up to the end of the show. L. Neal Smith's book is what?
Down with Power, Libertarian Policy in a Time of Crisis.
Okay. Ferb, you bring us right into the music. I'll talk to you off the air, but thank you. Thanks a lot for joining me, man. It's been a rough day. Thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah. Be seeing you.
Fire! quit messing around with every man in town. If you want me, baby, you know I'll be around. Oh, it's a shame you keep playing games. Baby, stake your claim, stake your claim on me. When I told you I love you, you just looked away. But when I went for the door, you begged me to stay. If you love me, baby, take my name. Oh, just stake your claim. Oh, stake your claim, yeah, yeah, yeah. You can't tie me down. If you want me, baby, you know I love you so. But if you don't say those three little words, I've got to let you go. Girl, to hold my hand, but if you just say the word, I'll forever be your man. Oh, no excuse.